Hey, and good afternoon. We got three people here on the Net That Hall matchup show for game week 31. Happy to say that that Kieran has come back, operating at the bookends of a holiday festival, I guess. So Kieran is the miraculous one here. FPL underscore discomfort is joining us down below there. And then up here we got Hogan at Draft Alchemy, person responsible for all the incredible new visualizations. And I have to say that like everyone's really enjoying them, but people have no idea just the hours you've saved me in like hunting down like heat maps and like lineups and stuff like that. That man, so many hours. So thank you so much. Thank you guys for both for being here. Start with you, Kieran. Just say hello. How you doing? If you want to talk about your game week or your weekend, it's all good.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well, thanks. It was a nice relaxing weekend for me down with family in the Devon coast. So kind of away from a lot of FPL. And I think you and I last week were talking about the dilemma where Gabriel was my only defender that I could kind of rely on going into this week. And I somehow managed to come away with him, Kirkes and Moreno all getting clean sheets. So quite miraculous this weekend, and that definitely probably the highlight for me.
Right on, Hogan. Tell us about about yourself for a little bit and the game week if you want.
Doing well. Just pulling up my score here real quick. I think I did okay points wise. Let's see here. Okay, 61. I'm kind of hovering around the 150K mark. I mean, I'm looking forward to kind of the quick turnaround. International break was a long one, it felt. Nice to be back in kind of the groove.
And it's nice to kind of go back to back after such a crazy game week 29 to do like 30 and 31 back to back and just kind of build ourselves back up. So with that in mind, we are going to try to make this like a super quick show, despite we do have three on here. But obviously the deadline is tomorrow. So we want to put this out. We wanted to make this easy to consume. So with that in mind, we will go on to the we'll move right into the FPL philosophy for this game week. FPL philosophy game week 31 comes to us from Hildegard von Bingen. It's around the 11th century. She said, cause and effect are not linear but circular, each flowing into the other. And I really like this actually on the back of what you just said, Hogan, like having game weeks back to back like this is kind of nice. And it does help us kind of link our thinking from one game week to another one a little bit better. But sometimes we plan in this very like linear way where we're like, okay, this is my plan for. Or sometimes we'll design it backwards, right? If we're using whatever chip in game week 34, what do we have to do to get there? What are the optimal moves and stuff like that? But we don't sometimes go into like, well, if I make this decision here, right? How will that affect what we go into how that'll affect other decisions, but we don't go into what if I'm wrong about this decision? And then we have to kind of feed that decision kind of back in to our thinking. So for every decision we make, I think to the way to honor its circular kind of natural tendency, the way to honor that is to have contingency plans as well, and have like make sure whatever plan you have isn't rigid. So like flexibility in your plan will allow you kind of like that circular movement. What do you guys think? A little esoteric, I'll grant.
I think
I like
it's a good point, isn't it? Yeah, I'll let you go first, actually. I'm keen to hear sort of your take on it.
that. All right. I mean a lot of kind of what I've been trying to do this season around planning is to be, as you mentioned, as flexible as possible. And kind of in a sense, for me, that's been, I'm a super data driven person, but for this season, I've really tried to kind of almost stay away from the trends and really just kind of figure out and focus on those like nailed on kind of certified ballers. And those guys are going to be, you know, churning out minutes and returns, hopefully. That said, I've kind of stayed away from chasing clean sheets and form, you know, specific decisions. And I think that that's really helped in terms of like having these expectations. You know, Chelsea had what, like close to a 50% chance of a clean sheet against Burnley. They go up a man and clean sheet's gone, you know? So it's one of those things where, you know, if you can kind of set yourself up for as many situations as possible, then you're going to kind of come out the other side, I feel, you know, a little bit more content.
I think I'm kind of the opposite, aren't I, Gabe, where I mentioned this to you earlier on in the season, where I'll analyze something and exactly to the point where you go, well, this is the outcome I see happening here. This is how the team should play alongside it. And when that doesn't happen, it's difficult to kind of steer away from that, particularly if it plays into the plan of I need this person in place, or even if it's someone you're planning to bring into the team, you kind of go, I know a lot of people look at Garnacho, for example, and we can kind of be stuck in that and not willing to divert away from them because of how much we need them as that particular asset, and not be willing to look elsewhere. I think one of the interesting things that this week showed was a lot of people wildcarded and were unfortunate with the number of injuries that happened. And it means that they do have to now make those different plans. But I think in some situations, we bring in that wrong player and we're not willing to move off of them quick enough. And that's potentially at that detriment to the rest of your team and the makeup of it.
Are you hinting at Haaland there, Kieran? We're going to talk about whether we should get rid of Haaland, I think, from now until he scores those five goals that we're all expecting him to score somehow. All right, cool. Again, great timing in the interest of that time. We're going to keep going here. So first thing I want to do is call everyone's attention, because there was a lot of work put into this by Hogan. All of the detail that's going into these predicted 11s is really great. Also, let us know in the chat how the visibility is. We're working on visibility issues, and we don't know how kind of how it comes across for you guys at home. Or hopefully you're at home and not like watching while you're walking or driving or doing something dangerous like that. First fixture of the game week, Newcastle versus Everton. Newcastle 2.08 net XG, Everton 1.49. Things that kind of stand out from a stats perspective, I'd say, is if we look at the zonal chance creation, Newcastle from the flanks, no surprise to anyone, 4.3 down each flank compared to 3.3 down the center. Everton creating down the center with 4.6. Now, there's something that Hogan's been teaching me. Like Kieran and I mentioned in last week's show that all of this, like reading your maps, is like a learning process for us here. So one thing that I guess you had mentioned recently to me is overlaying, like when overlaying the maps and like you're looking for areas that kind of like combine to be red. And you one thing we were talking about recently is that the zonal chance creations, they're kind of incorporated in expected threat. Is that right? Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. That's what's so nice about expected threat. It's kind of provides it a pretty holistic sort of a context to the game.
Mm-hmm. So keeping in mind that expected threat does contain the zonal chances, but the zonal chances maybe gives us a little bit of a more nuanced take. So we have Newcastle 4.3 from the flanks, and we look at the expected threat and the right side lights up. So double right side there, but then in the XG for Newcastle, it's the left and center that light up. So I'd love to like just bring you in from the start here and get your take on how you would read these maps.
Yeah. So first thing we can kind of go over is kind of really what expected threat is. I have a bit more of a long-winded sort of explanation. I don't know if it's the pinned tweet, on the Bird app on my account, but Basically, what we're looking at when we're looking at threat is we're only looking at successful events. So a successful dribble, a successful pass. The expected threat value is that's assigned is based on where the ball is progressed from. So if you're making a lateral pass from center back to outside back, that's, you know, you might even be losing threat in that sort of a situation. But if you're finding a successful pass, you know, in between the lines in the half space, that's going to get you a lot of threat built up over, you know, over those kinds of actions. So when we're looking at these zonal maps, we're looking at most frequently, you know, where the ball is moving forward and into dangerous areas. So I like to think of this as kind of either the pass before the assist or the pass before the shot. So your shot creating actions. So we're looking at, so I think that Mykolenko is injured or had a, you know, virus. I think I was reading. I'm not sure if he's owned heavily or not. Probably Braithwaite is the one who's got some decent ownership, maybe Pickford too. Newcastle tend to, last time I looked at the numbers, they tend to not take many shots, but take high XG shots. So not a team that you want to play your goalkeeper against. There's not going to be very many save opportunities. And Isaac converts. On the flip side, Isaac is I think an elite option here. Were you going to jump in there, Gabe?
Oh, it's good. I was just going to, I'm looking up Newcastle's shots. They do take a lot of shots, at least at home. They have the second most shot. Not fourth most or fifth most shots at home in the last six home games. Away,
similar in terms of on target or just total shots?
No, not total shots. Not on target. I don't have the on target data readily available.
Sure.
So let's bring it to like bring all of that to this game. If we're gonna look at Newcastle, I mean, from a chance creation perspective, maybe like it looks like Livermento might be playing on that right hand side. That could be a source of creativity. Fabian Scher could be a source of creativity. I look at the XG as kind of like where the, not all the time. In this case, I look at the XG as like where the penetration will be. So like Harvey Barnes and Isak kind of providing penetration, whereas the right side will kind of possess for the left. Kieran, let's bring you in at this point just to talk about like from a football perspective or the assets in this game for FPL. How do you see Newcastle versus Everton?
Yeah, I think it's similar to what you've both been saying there, where Everton just don't really seem to offer much threat at all, or they offer a threat but don't have people capable of actually scoring. In the end results, I think they've scored 6 goals in the last 2 months of football in the Premier League, which is pretty low. So I think it's one of those, from an FPL perspective, if you have those defenders, you potentially are looking at a rare clean sheet there. I think a lot of people have that double up of Dubravka and Areola and are forced into starting Dubravka, and it could be a good fixture for him. Particularly as Everton will still have high volume shots, but whether or not they're going to be goal scoring will sort of be doubtful. And then, yeah, just Isak, Barnes and whoever it is playing on that left side should just have a great time. So Isak's someone who, again, I wish my strategy didn't mean that I couldn't go for him, because he just looks fantastic every single game. And I think that Newcastle attack is just so, so good. And the way that he links up the play, you know, he was involved in 3 of the goals, wasn't he? It was sort of 2 goals and an assist for that Harvey Barnes equaliser. So he offers everything. So just a fantastic option. And another captaincy shout in challenge this week.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about him a lot on Friday, right? I wonder if that strategy constraint that you have, if you should plug that back into the circular planning there. I don't know, maybe. I think it's an amazing option.
Yeah, it's one of those where I'm looking at the fixtures that I can see Hogan's got below as well now for sort of Fulham as the next game. And then Tottenham and United aren't bad fixtures. And it's not the end of the world if you don't have strikers doubling in 34 if they've still got a decent fixture. So I don't think necessarily you need to make those sacrifices when the alternatives of the doubles are kind of Arsenal, Wolves, Palace, who don't have good fixtures building into that anyway. So, yeah, definitely worth reassessing potentially for me.
Cool. I'm going to bring in a couple people here from the chat and then we'll say hello to them soon enough here. First of all, this is Holler. Here's one of our Hollers on Discord as well. Thingamabob comes in. He's an Everton fan. He says, I would say the Zonals match up with what I'd expect as an Everton fan. We give up so much out wide for those Zonals and the fullbacks have been abysmal. Godfrey especially. Yeah, Godfrey's not really fullback made. So definitely like those zones. And then what do you guys think about William De Jager's question here? Thoughts on Barnes. Is he a viable option now? You guys think he's still a rotation risk?
He's an interesting one, isn't he? Because he's now safe with Gordon suspended. And then when Gordon comes back, if he gets a couple of yellow cards, he's suspended. So there's potential for that freeing him up. And I don't know how far away Almiron is from returning. But if they are looking at their front three of Isak, Barnes and Gordon, it's not a bad front three to be going with. And even if he is rotated, we saw he didn't start, did he? And he came off the bench and still got two goals, including the winning goal. So it's not as if he's a player who doesn't have high impact off the bench as well.
Yeah, I lean a little bit more on the not fantasy viable side of it. I know that Eddie Howe was really excited to get him in when he did, but he just doesn't seem to want to really take the you know the leash off and kind of let him run. I think he's a little bit worried in terms of him coming back from injury and having been out for so long and you know now that he's healthy, you know I think he wants to keep as many pieces in play as possible, since they've been hit so hard with injury. So I think that, you know, and Eddie he's someone who very rarely changes their lineups. He's not very tactically flexible. You know, we saw Barnes in a pretty advanced and exciting role when he was injury free at the beginning of the season, involved in everything. But kind of since then, he's really, you know, even when there was an opening. I think we saw Murphy start in that right wing, right forward position over a healthy Barnes. It's just those kind of things where it'll make me think twice, you know, about bringing somebody in like that, I think.
Mm-hmm. I would say sort of this side of 34, there's better options, aren't there? I think if we're looking the other side of 34, where they've just got great fixtures with Sheffield United, Burnley, then into the double, and then Brentford to finish it off. We'll have more information by then. There could be a lot more we're seeing. And with that being the only competition they're in, there's not necessarily going to be much on the line there, is there? So it's going to be a case of who Howe's looking to get minutes into towards the end of the season. So yeah, again, like Hogan said, probably not one of your first options in fantasy. Again, good ones for those weekly fantasy challenge games where you do know he's starting in this game week.
Barnes makes the fantasy challenge so good. So we will move on to the next fixture here. Nottingham Forest versus Fulham. Forest 1.54 net XG, Fulham 1.16 net XG. So kind of muted data there. We have the only thing that really sticks out is Forest goalkeeper at home is not good. The green means it's good for the opposing team. That will help Fulham. Fulham's data away isn't good either. And Forest have been kind of tight. They're who was I talking to that said that they are, that was talking about the perennial, someone was talking about like a 1-1s. And I mean, I don't know. I have Muniz. Muniz is my first bench, and I'm starting Saka. We'll get to Arsenal later, but I would kind of be avoiding this fixture except for Muniz. Just I would be avoiding this in general, I think. Maybe it will be if you have him. He's not a sell, but there are other options I think that we'll talk about soon that makes him a sell. We'll get through this one really quickly. Do you guys have any insight or anything interesting on this one? Do you have any assets here? Are you playing them?
No, it's not really any interest for me. I think if I'm looking through it, you've got Forest are the team at home, like you said, Gabe, where they've got the lowest possession of any team at home and the lowest shots per game of any home team. And this is in the league with sort of Sheffield United and Burnley. And then away from home, Fulham rank, I think, fourth for shots away from home and mid range for possession. So it's not really an exciting one where if you don't own, you're not rushing to get. If you own a Muniz, yeah, you're probably fine starting him because he is on incredible form. 8 goals in a very short period of time. And it's absolutely fine to go into plays like him that are on form because you'd still expect him to be involved in anything positive about Fulham. Particularly with sort of, as we saw in the last game, his willingness to take up those multiple positions in and around the box as well. But it's probably, compared to last week, an easier decision if you're starting between Muniz and Saka.
Anything to add, Hogan? You're on mute. You're on mute still. There you go.
All right, the one time I mute myself. Got him. Yeah, so I have Iwobi and Muniz. Both are starting for me this game week. My bench is a couple of villains going to City, so kind of forced hand. But yeah, as you said, Forest are really good at basically locking things down as long as possible, and then trying to kind of steal something in these really hectic, like, game state moments, which is something that Nuno and his teams have always been pretty good at, in terms of things are kind of loosening up a little bit. They kind of know exactly when to sort of like kind of, you know, stick the knife in, so to speak. So I think that there will potentially, I don't think there'll be a clean sheet here. And I do like, if you have someone like Morgan Gibbs-White, or I don't know, if anyone still has, you know, a residual Wood or something like that. I think both good options, but I wouldn't be wanting to get anybody in particular, particularly for this matchup. Maybe like a Robinson, you know, Anthony, Jedi Robinson, potentially. But yeah. I think I agree in terms of your assessment there.
All right, cool. We will move on. Yeah, I think there are just better options and better fixtures elsewhere. This one's just an awkward one and with very limited upside. Bournemouth versus Crystal Palace. Bournemouth 2.07 net XG, Crystal Palace 1.40. Stats standing out. Let's see. It's all kind of neutral stats except for Palace, who have the red stats, I think. I don't know, from a tactical perspective, I see this one as kind of almost similar to the last one. I think if you're attacking Palace, you're still attacking that Palace's right side. It doesn't show up in the XG map, but the XT map does show neutral areas compared to blue as if you're attacking Palace, neutral areas on the flanks. So definitely on the flanks, and I still think that left side. So but the problem is, like, Bournemouth's left side isn't a side that really, or hasn't been penetrating very much. They haven't been penetrating very much from that side. They usually kind of hold possession on that left hand side and penetrate from the center or right. So I think it's just a tactically awkward fixture, and I think every asset, including people are excited about Ezza right now. I think every asset is quite limited here. Hogan, let's go to you on this one. Do you have any assets in this game?
I don't, and yeah, I'll keep it short. I agree. I don't think I'd be bringing anybody in. You know, start your Neto if you have him in goal. But you know, other than that, yeah, I mean, a lot of people have Solanke. I shipped him for Muniz, but that's an interesting one. What do you guys think about somebody like Solanke in this one?
It's an interesting stage right now, isn't it? Because it all comes into the strategies as to whether you're free hitting 34 or if you need the players for 34. Because I think Solanke still remains the one, if you were bringing in a striker at this point that you wanted to double in 34, then he's definitely one of those contenders alongside sort of your Darwin if you don't own him. I think it becomes tricky for Palace, doesn't it? Because this is a good fixture, but then the next two are just City and Liverpool. And I'm someone who was looking to try and bring in a Palace player at some point, but you're not looking to necessarily bring anyone in like a Munoz now. It's almost like you've missed that opportunity or this is the last week for them. And even then, you're probably not expecting a clean sheet. I think this is one of those games where probably both teams do get that return and it probably is going to be those. Like, Solanke still is decent for this game because he is just so heavily involved, his conversion so high. And I just expect him to still be a good pick. Not someone that you necessarily rush to bring in, though. But if you are looking for someone for 34, the sort of run of this game, then Luton, then United, and a double of Villa and Wolves is definitely a nice option.
Yeah, so I'm just telling people that there's some good questions coming in the chat, and a lot of people are thinking about wild cards right now. So drop any wild card questions you have there in the chat. And we'll get to them at the end. If there are questions that kind of come up to the fixture that's relevant to what we're talking about in the moment, I may bring it up in the moment, but generally speaking, I will save the questions for the end. I think that pretty much covers this one. I mean, obviously if you have Solanke, you're playing him. This is a fixture you've been looking forward to, but I would be, you know, again, it's that the number nine against the back three as well. Kind of dampens his potential a little bit. Glasner's system is, you know, they're better than they were with under Roy. So there's that to add to the just the uncertainty as well. And for those that have kept Semenyo, I think you like Semenyo in this one. You know, outside of the back three behind the wingbacks. So he's a possible play. I don't know that you would play him ahead of a. I think you'd play him ahead of a Villa defender, maybe, but I'm not sure about other Villa assets. In the interest of time, we will keep it going here with Burnley versus Wolves. Talk about muted data. Burnley 1.34 net XG, Wolves 1.64. Not much difference there. The shot-based goal predictors, haven't mentioned them yet. They've been there hasn't been much differentiation, which is why we haven't mentioned them. I think it probably looks like, you know, we'll be looking for Wolves assets. I like the players on the outside. You know, Hogan, you put here that you have Sarabia starting up top in a front two with Cunha. The left wing. So I think eight Nuri is the standout pick in this fixture. Do you guys have anyone here? Kieran, let's go to you first.
I don't have anyone in this game, but again, Eight Nuri does feel like a great option in this game. At the same time, I don't really fancy Wolves at the moment. I think Sarabia is going to be heavily involved, and at his price point, it's just a great option. You know, what is he? I think 4.7, 4.9. Either way, he's very cheap, and he is
4.7.
4.7. Well, yeah. So it's one of those where he's going to be a key player for them. Whether he's going to be up top or whether he's behind that, he will be involved in set pieces. And Burnley just aren't a great team. But at the same time, I think this is a good game for Fofana. You know, he's had a rest. So he's not necessarily going from Saturday, Tuesday or to Wednesday. He didn't play this game against Chelsea. He's coming back into it. He was on decent form. So I think Ait Nouri could be good from an attacking perspective, but I expect both teams to sort of come away with a goal or two.
Mm-hmm. Fofana, interesting. It's the interesting shout with Fofana. Question for you, Hogan.
So Asignon is suspended, by the way. I just want to comment that he was the one who got that red card, yanking down a Mudrik in the game this past weekend. So he won't be there. What I think that'll do is shift Coutinho back in at right back. And I think it'll open up that right mid spot. Let's see, I'm looking through kind of my list here for potentially a Brownhill. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. No offense, Burnley fans, but they don't seem to do a whole lot, but have a whole lot of value in each box. I like Fofana. And as you mentioned, Sarabia, everything good, that's coming through at Wolves is going through Sarabia, set pieces. If you have him, you're definitely taking advantage of this matchup.
I think one thing I may say that's going to kind of counter me thinking both teams could score, but actually just looking at your predicted lineups, it's worth mentioning that Murick's come in now to take that Burnley goalkeeper spot and has been unreal since coming in. He's not been keeping clean sheets, but just save-wise. And if you look at his performance stats, it's fantastic. And I know people are looking to sort of move off of Areola. And whilst he doesn't have a double in 34, fixture run is decent. And they play, I think, Sheffield United in 34. So not a bad game at all. So he's someone who I think he has made a difference to their team and their defence. They're not losing games as heavily. He's saving shots that previously Trafford was conceding. But again, doesn't really change much. Not necessarily rushing to bring in a Burnley player. Just if you're forced into that goalkeeper option, it's worth throwing into your thinking.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I left him out on accident. He'll be starting. Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like O'Neill's teams, I think Wolves are just inconsistent, I find. And I think like they go two games where they're not doing well. And we think that this old kind of like uninspiring Wolves is going to come back. And then they come out and they play like two bangers and like tactically brilliant. So I don't know. After They lost to Villa. They lost to Coventry. They had a good game against Fulham. I don't know. So I could see. I don't think Wolves are gonna get. Colm says that he thinks. What did he say? He said he thinks Burnley could get something here, but I think Wolves are one better than we think. They're just inconsistent. And two, I wanted to ask you guys both, Sarabia or Garnacho, who's a better asset?
Right now, I'd say.
I'm a big Sarabia fan.
Yeah, on pen.
Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah, I'd go with the same. I think just in terms of how the teams are performing right now and the fixtures, I prefer Sarabia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. And I agree with BW Splitter here in the chat, and you mentioned it as well, Hogan. The Asignon missing is kind of a big deal. But the problem is it would be Nelson Semedo maybe trying to take advantage of that, and he's a disaster. Once if he gets the ball in the final third, it's who knows what's going to happen. So I don't think Wolves are kind of in a position to take advantage of that one. Do you have any of these players? Well, do you have any of these players in your challenge team? Are you doing the challenge, Hogan? Fantasy challenge thing?
I haven't opened it up. I took a peek last week, but I think it's forward score double. Is that right this week? Is that what it is?
This week forward score double.
I haven't had a chance to go back and look at how I did last week. But Cunha, I mean, the question mark is over whether he starts. I think O'Neill said a couple weeks ago, I think maybe in the middle of the international break, that he was close. He was training with the team. You know, he's such a fun player to watch. Like he's one of those players that that makes Wolves, it makes you kind of turn on a game like this. You know, otherwise you might be skipping, you know, your Burnley Wolves game. He's one of those players who can take a ball that's chest height and turn and beat somebody. He's exciting. I don't think that if there was maybe one more piece in there, like a Huang or, you know, a Pedro Neto, I think that helps to grease things. I don't think that Sarabia and Cunha alone have enough to really create that upside that you'd be looking for in somebody in your fantasy team personally.
I think it is worth mentioning, O'Neill did say earlier that Cunha will definitely be in the matchday squad barring any late setbacks. So not saying he's starting, but said that he'll be in that squad. So but again, doesn't clear him to necessarily be starting. But if you are looking for someone from that challenge perspective, if you are looking for that sort of wild striker to get those double points, he's the option. I think Fofana, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but he's just in mine and I can't move off of him, even though there are other options out there. I just like the way he plays, like how direct he is, and I like the fact he misses chances as well, because it's a similar sort of player to a Darwin and a Jackson, where you get a bit of enjoyment in a sadistic way watching them and going, that could be more points, and looking at a challenge kind of thing, it's a bit more enjoyable.
Okay, Kieran, going for the double Ds. I don't think I have anyone in my... Aitnuri will be in my fantasy draft team. I think he has a really high ceiling. All right, we'll move on to West Ham versus Tottenham. West Ham 1.52 net XG, Spurs 1.84. Spurs left side lights up for chance creation. Spurs right side lights up for expected threat. We saw some of that in the game yesterday as well, kind of that right side being forced. But before that, it was the left side for a while. So I don't know that they have a favoritism in terms of which side they're going to attack from, especially now that Madison is back. For West Ham, nothing really lights up for West Ham, I have to say. Like muted data, muted zones for Bowen as well. But that consistently the right side, both the XT and XG map lights up for Spurs. I'm not a Kulusevski guy. I could see how he might create something here. How do you see this one? I'm kind of used to attacking West Ham's right, so I'm surprised that it doesn't light up for Sun a little bit more. Kieran, what assets do you have here, and how do you see this one playing out tactically? West Ham at home, just for a little bit of context, West Ham actually have the lowest XG non-penalty at home in the last six. Forest are second. They're almost the same. Do you see a clean sheet for Spurs?
It depends. I think with Antonio, they looked so good with Antonio on the pitch against Newcastle. They were just great, and he was heavily involved, and they set up in a way to counter Newcastle. So I think to get the goal to put them 3-1 up, it was a counter from a corner and great work from Kudus, or I think was it Keder or Kudus, but to basically release Antonio, who showed what he does, where he's not the fastest, but he just has that build and that ability to just power through and score. And it was that move almost going defensive and bringing on Calvin Phillips that, yes, it led into that penalty and everything else, but that team was looking good. And Antonio is a player where when he's on form, he is a great asset. And that Spurs defense is a team that you can get. I don't ever trust Spurs to keep a clean sheet, to be honest, under Ange. I don't think it's necessarily his prime goal, particularly away from home. I think he goes there expecting to concede and knowing he's going to have to get two or more goals in that game. And Spurs are a kind of team that keep pushing until stoppage time. The amount of goals we've seen them score in sort of the final five or sort of plus 90 this season is phenomenal. And it's a testament to the way that they're playing, that they don't give up. And I think it's also interesting that Son got his return when Richarlison was on that pitch with him. I don't particularly like Son when he's playing through the middle. It was more so in that game matchup where he's not that player to get the ball or for you to cross it into when you're exploiting out wide, because he's 5'10". And he's not necessarily the fox in the box. He's a player where if he's on the periphery, on the outside of the box, he creates so much. So I have Son and Maddison in this game. And arguably, I like it slightly more than the last couple of weeks. I think this could be an open game where it's a London derby. And I just think both teams will be going for it. I think West Ham, after losing from 3-1 up, they definitely are going to be going into this. And whilst they might try to keep it a little bit tighter, inevitably Spurs have that ability to unlock them, and they are going to have to sort of open themselves up when they go to get back into the game.
What are your thoughts, Hogan?
Yeah, I like all that. That Kieran brought up a lot of good points there. So I think that a lot of this game is going to hinge on whether or not we see Mickey in the lineup. You know, obviously we're not gonna know that. Going into the game week, we might get. You know, Ange has been pretty transparent in his press conferences in terms of, you know, people coming into the team if they're ready. So if we get a hint of, you know, there's some sort of a niggle that's still there, I'm definitely playing. You know, your Bowens, your Kudus, you know, I think that those guys have an opportunity against a Tottenham team without that pace and recovery there. But yeah, and I, you know, if you've got your Sons, your Richarlisons, you're definitely going to be starting them. And I think another big miss here is Areola. The quality of chance that he is able to prevent is almost unmatched. And I mean, it's one of those where you'll be watching the game and you'll see, you know, I feel like, I don't have a statistic to back this up, but I feel like he must have some, like, the highest number of saves that come from, you know, in, like, within the 6-yard box. You know, he just has an uncanny ability to be, you know, be where the shot's going to be from close range. I think, you know, with Fabianski in there, they're going to be losing a lot in terms of both the leadership and that shot stopping ability.
Interesting that you mentioned shots in the six. I'm just looking up that stat really quickly here. Spurs have the most shots in the six in the last six away games. 13. So that could. So not having having Areola would be quite handy playing against a team that takes a lot of shots in the six, right? So to your point, yeah, that's really interesting. I still kind of think that I agree that this could be an open game. But I think it's also a little bit unpredictable because of the derby type nature of it. Obviously, you start the assets you have. If I'm choosing between Bowen and Kudus in this one, do you want? I think it's more of a Bowen game, that, to be perfectly honest. It just his like tactical awareness, his ability to play. I mean, Kudus can move into different positions as well. But he does it more with the ball. And I think Bowen can exploit space a little bit more without the ball. I feel like there are a lot of awkward matchups with a short turnaround. There are very like a kind of there's a lot of parity in the fixtures, and with a short turnaround makes it a little bit difficult to predict. Chatsport's asking if anyone thinks that Kulu gets dropped. And that's how you have it here, right? You have Brennan Johnson on the right and Son on the left with Richarlison. So you do think Kulusevski gets dropped. I agree. I think they want more penetration from that right hand side, and Kulusevski, what he does is slow the ball down, slow the progression down. Cool. We're gonna try to go a little bit quick fire here. Although this is an interesting one with for Tony owners especially, Brentford versus Brighton. Brentford 1.66 net XG, Brighton 1.81, which I thought was interesting, took me a little bit by surprise. Brentford's zonals, at least from a chance creation perspective, are really bad. But then when you look at the XT and XG maps, it's all blue. So it favors Brighton almost across the board with the metrics here.
So much is that possession. That's where you're looking at.
What's that?
A lot of possession. You're looking at a lot of possession for Brighton.
Right, but it's even saying that it'll be dangerous possession. Right? Like Brighton's going to have a lot of dangerous possession. Do you see this game that way, Hogan? Do you think that do you favor Brighton the way the metrics do here?
Big time. I don't think there's a worse form team than Brentford, and I mean, bar Everton, I think they're really struggling. Injuries in key places have kind of really knocked them off that off their perch that they, you know, that last season where they were just, you know, they were able to keep games so tight and pull off these, you know, these crucial wins. I think, you know, I'm playing, you know, Mbeumo for sure. I think he scored last in the reverse fixture. Might've been a penalty, but he's not obviously going to be taking penalties anymore, unfortunately, but I'm still starting someone like Mbeumo. There's goals against Brighton. You were asking about the Brighton side of it. Am I right in thinking that a lot of people have kind of stayed away based on the, you know, the roulette nature of Robert De Zerbi's selection tactics? Because I have. I've kind of been the avoiding headaches fantasy manager this season.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kept me steering clear of the Seagulls, unfortunately. There's a lot of output there, but it's hard to pick who is going to be the one, you know?
What are your thoughts, Kieran?
Yeah, I think this is an open game. Like Brighton's attack against it, I think Brentford just are. There's something not working for them defensively. It just seems that from every attack, there's just no cohesion. They're not following the runners. They're being exploited quite easily, and they're conceding from the majority of the chances that go against them. And Brighton are a team, as Hogan said, that just dominate possession, particularly away from home. It's a De Zerbi way that he sets up, particularly with sort of that midfield really just suffocating teams and having that ball and having that ability to spread it out wide to Adingra. And Welbeck's on good form again at the moment and is the kind of form player where he's now taking those shots outside the box and he's scoring them. So I like it from just a pure openness perspective. I think it is a game where both teams will be attacking. Brentford are fortunate that there's four or five teams worse than them this season, because I think they could have been in real danger of going down. They've got favourable fixtures coming up. And with Mbeumo coming back, it should definitely help them out. But Tony's looked still underwhelming. I know he was taking a lot of shots in the last game and is heavily involved there. But that was the first time, as someone who's owned him for the last, well, over Watkins, whenever I made that decision, essentially. So a long time, there's just not been that cohesion in that attack. So I think it's a game that probably Brighton come away with a win, and it could well be sort of a 3-1, 3-2 scoreline for them with just how open it could be.
Yeah, this one's tough to call for me. I think Brentford are a team similar to Wolves, where they're actually tactically pretty good. They have some good players. They're ravaged by injury, sure. But they can sometimes come back and then be like, oh, right, I remember Brentford. Brentford can be good. I don't know that this is – I'm not saying that it'll happen in this one. I think this is a tough one for them. But again, like I think Mbeumo, I'll say it again. I think Mbeumo does help Tony. I think Tony is an obvious start playing at home. Brighton are open; they like to push forward and like to attack. So you're starting him from a Brighton side. I'm starting to get the feeling that Adingra is just kind of sliding into that Mitoma kind of role, and so I'll be from Brighton side. There's no interest because of the uncertainty there. But I'll be looking to see if Estupiñán and Adingra start combining a little bit, and the kind of like the focus gets shift back to that side in terms of creativity. But again, I'm not, there's so much uncertainty. I'm not touching Brighton. And again, it's a tough one when the stats are so even. Moving on to Manchester City versus Aston Villa. I mean, look at these stats. Like, nothing's in green except for maybe the left and central zones for Manchester City with 4.3 each. Man City, 1.51 net XG at home. Aston Villa away, we know they're a different beast. 1.27 their net XG away. Red for Aston Villa. White neutral stats for Manchester City. The XT map is obviously showing the flanks for Manchester City. They possess a lot on those flanks. You have Bernardo Silva on the right, combination Doku, Grealish, whomever on the left. But then the XG is kind of flipped, right? We have Villa with the only red, although it's light red, slight pink there. XG map in their top left zone there. So again, another awkward one. Shockingly, I don't have like Haaland. I get the idea of Haaland getting in behind a maybe high line. I don't think Emery's gonna go to the Etihad and play a super high line. He does crazy things, but I don't think it'll be like that. So I think this is just another awkward one, and Haaland is not in a captain consideration for me this week. How do you guys see this one? Are you guys bullish on City like everyone else here in this fixture?
Yeah. So there's the Watkins injury. Coming off at halftime, we haven't had. I don't think we've had a real definitive comment except for that. I think he felt his hamstring. Was the last. I saw Emery comment on it. I think an interesting one, Moreno in terms of an enabling goalkeeper for people who are potentially wildcarding. I do like a City clean sheet just based on the fact that Watkins is out most likely. I know Villa has a reputation this season, but I'm starting my City defenders if I don't have any personally, but I know there are some out there. Maybe looking at like a Gvardiol. And again, Moreno potentially, depending on how the severity of Ederson's injury.
You mean Martinez?
But yeah. Say again?
Well, did you mean Martinez?
So Ederson's out. So in terms of like, in terms of that goalkeeper, what is he?
Oh, Ortega, Moreno Ortega. Yeah.
Moreno. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I use Moreno realizing that there's another Moreno on the other side of the pitch. but yeah, I'm benching all my Villa, playing my City. Foden and Haaland, for sure. And my City defenders, I think I like them for a clean sheet.
Do you see a clean sheet, Karen, for City?
No. I know there's no Ollie Watkins, but I just I see City bouncing back after, you know, a goalless draw against Arsenal. You know, they will definitely be scoring, and I'd expect them to get a couple of goals against against Emery and Villa. But I just think with the way that they'll play and approach this game, it will be different to that Arsenal game where we saw them just controlling a lot of the possession and really just getting down the wing, passing it back around, really looking for those opportunities in behind, but not getting many touches in and around the box. I think this game they will, and it'll be because of that lineup with Grealish and Doku, but I think it also leaves them vulnerable in the break. And I probably see this game where, yeah, they have to start Bailey and Diaby, who both have a loss of pace, but I also think they'll probably start Zaniolo as well on the left-hand side. Mm. And I think it then just gives them so many options on that fast break. And with the way City will approach it, it will be different to the Arsenal game, where they're not going to be so patient with the ball at the back trying to pass their way out of it. They will be looking for the fast breaks, etc., and potentially not paying as much attention to what they're doing with those passes, which does leave that opportunity for Villa, who also do have a high press, and particularly if they do have those three players, to be able to nick that ball there. So I see a comfortable City win at the end of it, but I don't think it will necessarily be a comfortable game for them. I think it probably finishes up with like a 3-1 scoreline, but I think we see more of a tight affair with Villa maybe getting the early goal or pulling one back pretty early into the game.
What I'll say is that I don't think Villa can press the way they want to press without missing both McGinn and Kamara. So they can't press that with Luis and Tielemans. So I think that they're going to be a little more conservative than that. But I do think they're going to score. I think Bailey and Diaby both do not suit City. And counterattacks with those two guys, I think will be quite dangerous here. So that's why I don't see a City clean sheet. And I see something from those two fast guys. Diaby scored a great goal, obviously, the other day. And do you guys own Haaland?
No.
You don't, right, Karen?
I do, yeah.
I don't, thankfully. Well, I don't know what I'd do if I did, basically. I was saying thankfully because I don't know what I'd do with him if I did, but I'd still like this game for him. I think he gets a return in this game.
Right. So question, Hogan, one, are you captaining him? And two, if he blanks in this game week, are you selling him?
So for answer your first question, I got Salah, so I'm not captaining Haaland, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You can't pass up that Sheffield fixture for Salah. If he doesn't bag, if he doesn't return, am I selling him?
On the next,
you know, the time of the season when I had the biggest jump in overall rank was when I went Haalandless. So, I mean, it was fun. It was just more fun too, because it's always such a predictable conversation, you know, when he doesn't blank. It's kind of nice to kind of be able to tune out when that sort of conversation is happening, you know, on socials or, you know, on your favorite podcast. So I'm definitely not against it. I wouldn't say don't do it, but with the likes of, you know, Watkins out, I mean, what, you know, what other options potentially, you know, are there? Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough call.
What makes you suggest that though, Gabe? Because I know they've got the City game between that Palace and Luton fixture, but looking at that run of games, I still think he'd start all of them. And I think Palace and Luton are still decent fixtures for him, obviously, with someone like Haaland.
Mm-hmm.
I think the time to sell him was probably before that blank Liverpool Arsenal run, that if you held him through that, you now want him for these next three fixtures. And then, yeah, maybe he gets a break after that. But in a weird way, I see probably the game, if he's not going to start any of the games, or one where maybe Pep's not prioritising as much over the other two competitions, I think it could be that FA Cup game against Chelsea that he could well get his rest. So I still think he's someone, if you own him, I wouldn't be looking to sell.
I guess what makes me ask that is just this idea. I think what Hogan said, that the time that he's risen in rank most is when he got rid of Haaland. And you look at Haaland, his lack of involvement for a while now. And can you, is there a benefit to going Isak over Haaland, for example? We talk about Isak's fixtures. He has the fixtures like Haaland does, arguably, and the form like Haaland doesn't, right? Also, Isak, he won't have any European fixtures. Haaland is going to have Real Madrid sandwiched with Luton sandwiched in between, right? I think Haaland plays. He may have limited minutes, but I think he starts every game when healthy. But he's not as effective. He hasn't been that scary monster that we learned to love last year, right?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do we have a? I think most people probably have Watkins in their team as well, right? So it's more, he's the person you're moving on, and then do we have that many striker options? So if you've got Watkins and Haaland, you're moving Watkins on, and outside of an Isak, Darwin, maybe a Muniz, you still would rather a Haaland over probably a Muniz. I know they're completely different price points, so it's crazy to be comparing.
I am, but I am considering selling, to be honest, for Isak. And then you think he's after Villa, he faces Palace, which is a back three, and he faces Luton, which is a back three. He didn't do great against Luton away to Luton, right? And then Brighton, away to Brighton, it's a fine fixture for him, but it is away again. They're not going after it. Then Forest, we just talked about how Forest is keeping the XG down when they play home, and that game is away as well. Like is the upside that we think is there? Obviously, he has potential in all of these. These are good fixtures. I'm just wondering, are these with other players with equally good fixtures? Are other players with equally good fixtures better at this point?
I don't think there's any fixture equally as good as Haaland against Luton.
That's fair.
And that could potentially it's all really how you frame it, and it's really tough to do that in a particular way sometimes when you're looking at so many options, because you want your confirmation bias for what you're going to do anyways. You know, you probably already know in your head what you're going to do.
What I want to do.
You're trying to back that up, and you can So I mean, we can all listen to us talk about fantasy, but in the end, I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to listen to you, Gabe. You know, I'm gonna go in and pick my guy, and that's what makes it fun. But I mean, the amount of what you can get from Haaland in that one game at Luton could be you know 3 or 4 weeks worth of another striker's output. So I mean, if you bet against the market every single time, you're going to go. You know, you're going to go broke. Every once in a while it's okay, but if you have him, I'm not getting rid just yet.
Mm-hmm. I think the key thing, I saw someone post a stat, and I can't remember who it was on Twitter earlier, and it was going, you know, Watkins replacements, and when you actually just look at Haaland's stats compared to every other striker, still, regardless of how he may have been off of form recently, it's like 26.65 expected goal involvement, of which he's got 25 goals and 4 assists this season. And you compare that to all of the other strikers, you go, it's 29 goals and assists this season. and he's got a fixture run of Villa at home, Palace away, losing at home. And then Spurs, like, it's... I do think the time probably to get rid of him was against those teams that were looking to keep it tight because they're in a title race against him. And those games, the Arsenal-Liverpool games, were must not lose for both of those teams. I think if either of those teams had lost that game, they were out of the title race. Whereas City dropping points, they're not out of it. It's Man City. It's just the first time in a long time they've been having it out of their hands to two teams and needing two teams to drop points. So I think that's what the key part is. I think other teams, you know, they're not going to be approaching it the same way. They're not going to have those teams where they're doing, whilst they might employ the same tactics, they're not going to have the same quality players as Liverpool and Arsenal to be able to withhold that City attack. And there were plenty of times when City were one pass away from unlocking Arsenal, and that first goal could have then been damaging. So I think against a team like Villa, I like him. And like Hogan said, that losing game, whilst they might have kept him quiet in one game, it's every ball goes to him. I was just watching the game as an Arsenal fan yesterday, and I was with my parents, and they asked if I wanted to go to the pub. I went, well, no, I'm hoping it's the boringest game in the world and will make you regret ever leaving the house. I want nothing to happen in this game. But every time even the cross went to Haaland, I was closing my eyes. And that's, we've got good.
You got your wish, though.
I did. But but I don't think Villa sort of have that same ability against someone like Haaland, who he doesn't like going through a drought. And he is the kind of person that when he hits, he will come back with a vengeance and he will bite back hard. And probably this is setting him up well for that game against Real Madrid, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And actually, I'll take on the Luton fixture with the Spurs fixture. I think the Spurs fixture is better for Haaland than the Luton fixture. So we'll do a little gentlemanly side bet here. Haaland versus Luton against Haaland versus Spurs. And I bet he scores more versus Spurs.
Okay.
I think we have just the... Is it just the last one? Yep, this is the last fixture here of the game week. Chelsea hosting Manchester United. Chelsea 2.0 net XG, Manchester United 1.43. Red across the board as far as the stats go. Chelsea zonal chance creation center, 5.2 chances down the center, four down the left and 3.8 down the right. If we look at the maps, XT map for Chelsea lights up red on the right side there. Thank you, Cole Palmer. And the XG map lights up down the center. And then for Manchester United's XG map lights up on the left again. It did last week again, but again, when we remember who's playing there in Rashford, probably nothing will come from that. And then there's just like a slight kind of neutral area as far as the XT goes. So heavy favoritism for Chelsea here. Cole Palmer is an obvious start. I think he obviously can create damage in many different ways, but I like him kind of causing chaos a little bit between the lines for Manchester United. And again, there's been Nico Jackson, but there's the yellow card issue, so I doubt we're bringing Nico Jackson in. But question, I guess let's start with fantasy challenge for this last one. Nico Jackson, in your fantasy challenge drafts for this game week?
I hadn't thought about him before seeing this. I might think a bit more about him now, because I was looking for that third striker option, and I'm going a bit rogue with mine this week, potentially. Yeah, he's definitely one worth considering, just looking at how those matchups are and how United have looked in this game. And in a weird way, yeah, I agree with the net XG in this game, where I think probably Chelsea edge it. If anyone's going to win, I think it's either a score, a draw, or Chelsea come away with that 2-1. And everyone's going to have Palmer in one fantasy aspect or another, just with his involvement in absolutely everything. But Nicholas Jackson is just that potential high upside pick, particularly in a game week where you are getting those double points.
I'm a United fan here, so I'll try not to let that color my opinion here. If you would pay attention to the last outing, our spine, our two center backs that started at the weekend at the GTEC are down for the count. Which I actually don't think is too much of a bad thing. I actually, when I've seen Maguire and Martinez together, I've liked that partnership. Our defensive efforts are like a tenfold better when he's in there. I really think that this could be, and I know the market doesn't agree, but I think this could be, it would be so typical of United to have a, is this the turnaround moment again game against this Chelsea team? I might even be looking at the other side of the pitch in terms of a striker over Jackson potentially.
I can see that actually. I can see a match against a somewhat dysfunctional Chelsea, an under pressure Chelsea that misses chances for fun. I could see that being the game for United. You guys certainly kind of like took it to them at Old Trafford, right? I think that game took everyone.
It was
by
a
surprise,
weird game.
It was so weird.
Yeah, weird game.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying Nico Jackson is an option, but I think obviously Cole Palmer is the obvious standout, and he will make things happen. I don't know. I don't know that Varane gets benched after his recent performance.
He came off injured.
Oh, did he? Oh, see, I didn't know he was injured.
Yeah. I didn't include him in my injuries there, which is so. but yeah, it's a big miss for sure. Maybe he'll be fit. Maybe, you know, don't think so though.
Question from the chat here from Nandish: who looks better, keeper to start in this game, Petrovic or Onana?
Got both. He's got both. So. So I think there's similar question marks around Chelsea back line. So Gusto went out, he's a big outlet for them. So one of their best, arguably their best center back is going to get shifted out to right back, which is what Poch has been doing, with De Zazzi. Mm-hmm. I would be going Onana in goal. You know, we've shown the ability to be able to kind of lock things down. And he's a bonus point esque goalkeeper. Couple of key passes potentially this season, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I like Onana.
I kind of think I'd go with Onana as well. I'm looking at the goalkeeper metric there. Looks good for Onana. 0.3 is decent. He's saved 5 of 11 big. You guys, United have conceded 11 big chances in the last 6 away, which is not great, but not terrible. And Onana has saved 5 of them. So say Chelsea are limited to 2 big chances in this one, Onana can save one. I like him better for save chances. If I like Chelsea to get more attack than United, and I like United's goalkeeper better, I think that combination leads to maybe higher probability of saves. So I agree. I'm with Onana in this one. Kieran?
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think one of the stats I like looking at just in terms of goalkeepers is post-shot expected goal per shot on target. So basically what their success rate is after a shot on target goes against him. And in all the top 5 leagues, he ranks 19th, but actually in the Prem, he's third. And that's behind Vicario and Martinez, where he's sort of this season at 4.5, which is particularly high. So he is a player where, yes, Chelsea will have high XG chances, but he's the kind of goalkeeper that can prevent those. And even large volume of low XG ones. So if you were to go with either one of them, probably expected neither to keep a clean sheet, then he's got the higher potential to get those save points and potentially, you know, he might still have an assist in him some way, some shape, some form on a fast breakout to a Rashford or a Garnacho.
Cool. I think we'll move on. That was the last fixture. Oh, we missed Arsenal-Luton, huh? Did we?
And I think
Liverpool-Sheffield we might have.
Liverpool, Sheffield. I'm just going to look through the slides here. I thought I had them all, but I did them all in such a rush today with the short turnaround. Yep, don't have them. I do have the slide made, so I can read it out. I'll bring it up here.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Arsenal Luton. Arsenal actually has the highest net XG of the game week. It's 2.51. Luton 1.24. So maybe a goal there. Arsenal's zonals, the chance creation, decent. 4.8 on the left, 5.3 down the center, and 5.2 on the right. The XT map, Arsenal, deep red on the right-hand side, medium red on the left-hand side, and blue down the center, which I found really interesting. And then the XG map, kind of like a medium red on the flanks and a neutral down the center. As far as the maps, everything blue for Luton. Now, with Saka potentially injured, you have Jesus starting at the nine and Martinelli on the left here, Hogan. I could see that. I do think Martinelli starts for sure. I think Trossard could maybe start at the nine against Luton. Not sure yet. Just kind of like occupying space. How are you guys set up for this one? How do you see this match? And we'll start with you, Kieran. How many Arsenal players, or which Arsenal players do you own?
So this game's particularly tricky because I think this is the ultimate game where we're going to give minutes to players and get rest into others. So I actually expect probably Ben White to get a rest for Tomiyasu in this game. And I really expect Thomas Partey to probably start and give, you know, whether it is a Jorginho or even a Declan Rice, a rest ahead of really important Champions League games, because this is the one out of any of Arsenal's upcoming fixtures where, without wanting to take losing lightly, if you were to start off with other players, and particularly someone like Thomas Partey, who will be key for us in that Bayern game, then this is a game to do it. Which I think, if we are doing that, then yes, I think we concede. So I like Luton to get a goal there, but I think Arsenal still come away with it comfortable. I don't own an Arsenal attacker, and this was a game week that Saka was coming in. And he might get a rest. And I think Arteta starts him whenever he can, but it wouldn't surprise me if this was one of those games where he doesn't start, particularly when we can start a Trossard or a Reece Nelson out on that side without any concerns, because the drop-off's not that bad and the majority of our players are back. Or you could even put Martinelli on the right, as we saw against City, and a Gabriel Jesus on the left with Havertz still playing through the middle, or even Nketiah. So I think there's so many options for what we might rotate into, that Saka being fatigued and potentially needing a rest at some point leans me away from him. And I was hoping not to see a blue through that middle, because I think the natural one for me to have to therefore just cover off through 34 would be an Odegaard. But even saying that, I still think he'll be heavily involved in anything Arsenal do here. I think whether or not he's spreading that ball as that final pass, as wise players cut through around the outside and in between the sort of fullbacks and centre-backs, I think he is going to be heavily involved, and I still think he'll get some shots away from the edge of the box. So he'll probably be my transfer in. And even though I don't think Arsenal necessarily keep a clean sheet, I do think this is a great game where we're going to have high volumes of set pieces. And I think it is one where I think I'd back Gabriel as a higher probability to get an attack in return than a clean sheet this week.
Hogan?
Yeah, so I've got White, Gabriel, and Saka. I don't like hearing that you think that there's going to be a lot of rotation at the back. But I'm not sure why it didn't cross my mind. I think that you've got a point. Arteta really likes Tomi. Whenever he's available, he always seems to get these cameos. If I remember correctly, wasn't he was heavily featured on the left side, right? So he might get the feature over Kiwior, who's been logging a lot of minutes. But isn't Zinchenko's fit? Isn't he fit as well? Yeah. So, you know,
I can't see us doing both though at once. I think he'll change one or the other to start with, and the other one comes off as soon as he feels comfortable doing so. So I think it could well be like whichever one of a Kiwior or a White starts probably comes off in and around that 60th minute, and you're hoping it happens beforehand for like
Zinchenko. Right. That's a good point. So do you get to the 60th minute mark? Do you worry that he subs Raya for Ramsdale? Do you start a different keeper? You know, I mean, he has said in the past, like literally, right? He said that he wishes he would have taken Raya off. you know, I think it was around like the 55th or something like 52nd minute. It's interesting. I mean, if you gamble that they don't keep a clean sheet and you're right and everyone else starts their double or, you know, their single or double Arsenal defense, you're going to come off better off. I think that's a pretty low risk gamble. And after this conversation, I might actually take the hint and maybe bench both my Arsenal defenders potentially.
I'd still like them from set pieces, though. I do think sort of a Gabriel is likely to play throughout if he starts. I think it is just a Ben White, and it's not beyond Arteta to decide at halftime when, let's say, it's a 3-0. Great, I can take off whoever the other fullback is that I didn't start and give them a break now, which is obviously the worst thing that we have as FPL managers, sort of being on your way to a nice, comfortable, clean sheet and then losing it out there. But even still, I do think Luton will get that goal against us just with the way they attack. Luton are a team I genuinely love watching them. And we said it last week, but this time round against Spurs, they got the goal early. Sometimes they're happy to go two goals down and then decide to start attacking teams. But either way, you can never rule them out of just going at their opposition and getting a return in it. So, yeah, I think it'll be a high-scoring game. But it's just about picking those right assets to have in your team.
I'm a little more bullish on Arsenal's clean sheet, I think, than you guys. I think what Luton do well, I think Arsenal counters well. I think Arsenal, they have good positioning and good physicality to deal with crosses, with set pieces and stuff like that. They obviously are a threat in themselves in set pieces. So I think that will neutralize Luton. And if you think like, well, how are Luton going to try to attack Arsenal? The same way they always do, they attack everybody with Doughty, right? So it'll most likely be kind of like Doughty relying on kind of Doughty crosses or something like that, or Doughty to progress the ball. So if I could see Ben White being benched in this one and Tomoyasu playing there on the right-hand side just to sit and just to pressure Doughty's crosses, so to throw him off a little bit. And I think disrupting Luton in that way could really just neutralize them. And the form Arsenal is in right now, I do see the clean sheet. I would not bench any Arsenal defenders. So interesting that we have some disagreement here.
The one that surprised me. So if I were to ask you to guess, when do you reckon the last time, month, date, whatever, game week, that Luton failed to score was?
Oh, I know they've scored.
Haven't they scaled every single game?
No, so it was like November the 11th against United when they.
Yeah,
I think it's only been like four or five games when they haven't.
Oh,
but it's just that's my view just on them, where I think when Partey and Tomiyasu came on against City, there were moments where we were panicking in defence, where it looked like we were just kicking the ball anywhere and it was ricocheted all over the place, and players were like, Tomiyasu has this way where he goes into a challenge where, if it's with if he's facing the wrong direction, he'll put his foot in and then turn his back to the player. And you've then got no idea what's going to happen from it. So I just think I don't think it's necessarily because Arsenal aren't capable. And I think if we were starting our team and having a core focus on it, then absolutely we should get a clean sheet out of it. I just think it's one of those games where the defence take their eye off the ball, where it's a careless pass out the back, where Luton are just able to pounce on it with a quick through ball from a Barkley to a Morris who just hits it first time. I think it's one of those. I don't think it's going to be high chances for Luton. I think they'll get one or two chances, and it's whether or not they take it, when Arsenal will potentially not be as focused defensively compared to... You can't take away the fact that they had to be switched on for over 100 minutes against City and not have a single second of not focusing. That you can kind of forgive them if they do take their eye off the ball for a moment or two in a game like this.
You know, you could also potentially see some rotation with Luton too. I mean, you wonder if potentially they kind of see this as almost a free hit, and that benefits Arsenal in terms of having some new faces on the field. I wouldn't bet a lot on that, but you know, the fact that Doughty's a doubt, I mean, that's a huge hit, you know.
Yeah. And without a doubt, it's hard to say. Maybe you don't need Tomiyasu on the right there to deal with his crosses, right? So maybe Ben White does play. Nandish says, Kivior played 210 minutes for Poland, who will likely be the one of the two to not start. Gabriel, Saliba, and White will start is my prediction as an Arsenal fan. That certainly makes
that's a good point.
Some sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben White got the international break to go on holiday, didn't he? Actually go on holiday somewhere. So yeah.
Right on. We will go to the last one, Liverpool. I can't believe I almost missed the two most important fixtures here of the game week. Let's see, make sure I have it going.
I would not have went over well.
No, it wouldn't. Good thing you guys are here to keep me on track. Here we go. Liverpool, Sheffield United. Liverpool 2.3 net XG. Sheffield United 1.11. Look at the right zonal for Liverpool. 6.4 expected chances created from that right hand side. Backed up, obviously, since it's incorporated in. It should be backed up by the expected threat map. Deep red on the right hand side and medium red on the left hand side for Liverpool. Now, when you move to the XG map, it's red across the board, deep red on the right, little less deep in the middle, and that medium red on the left for Liverpool. Gonna ignore most of the Sheffield United kind of areas except for that left. Just a shout out our boy Ben Brereton Diaz, Kieran, the neutral left zone, I guess, against Liverpool. Maybe he can get something there. But let's talk about Liverpool. It's been a good 5-10 minutes here talking about Liverpool before we head out. Salah, the obvious captain, and maybe the best possible fixture playing wide against the Sheffield United team. But in terms of the other players, you know, it depends also who we have versus who we would want to bring in. Now Luis Diaz is starting to bang. Are we looking at Diaz? Somebody that I'm going to throw out right from the top here, and I have him in my fantasy challenge front three, is Cody Gakpo. I think Gakpo starts over Darwin in this one because he can play in between the lines, because he can play in front of that back three and link other players and draw a lot of attention centrally. So it would make sense, in my opinion, for Klopp to rest Darwin this mid game week, start Gakpo there, and enable the two wide, and in doing so, enable the two wide players in Salah and Diaz, rather than starting Darwin, who's going to run into kind of like those areas that you're trying to create space in. So I'll start right there. How do you guys see this one?
I agree, based on my predicted XI there. Although I think that it's Diaz that gets the bench. I don't remember Nunez's minutes internationally, but I'm pretty sure that Diaz had a lot of traveling and some decent minutes there as well, and also injury history. I wouldn't be surprised if there's even more rotation than what we see here, with potentially, I mean, it would be a travesty, but you know, what if we see, you know, potentially Elliot, you know, Harvey Elliott at right wing, Salah, you know, making way. We've seen Connor Bradley playing right wing at times. It's a tough one to call lineup wise, but there's a lot in it, returns wise. If you look at that on the predicted XI graphic, there's that 2.5 indicator, which is your market over 2.5, and it's pretty high. that's no joke. Takes a lot for it to get, you know, for sentiment to be that. So there's a lot of goals. It's just hard to predict where they'll come from.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's going to start in there, so I'm not sort of going to weigh in on that aspect, but it is as you sort of touched upon there, Darwin only played one of the two international games, played against Argentina, and then was rested for the second game. So, and that took place at in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. So so there would have been some travel there, but then he didn't play the other game, and obviously back into it now. Although Diaz has played the last sort of eight games for them. Either way, though, this just is a great game for sort of that Salah captaincy, and one where, whilst I don't think he's necessarily a good option longer term now, this is a game where Bradley can haul and just have such a fantastic game. It wouldn't surprise me to see a double-digit return from him. I also think McAllister's going to have a game where he's heavily involved. And I think he's starting to become more and more of an option from an FPL perspective, where he is getting more forward and more progressive, and Liverpool do have good fixtures coming up. And this could well be a good game for him as well. So I'm looking at having him in my fantasy challenge this week, but I'm also putting him back into consideration longer term from an FPL perspective.
I think McAllister's a good shout here against the back five. And eye test certainly backs that up. I want to say Szoboszlai because tactically is a great fit. It's a great matchup for him tactically, but I don't think the eye test fits. I don't think we've seen him step into those dangerous areas that McAllister has recently. So I would probably lean towards McAllister in that scenario. And are you guys captaining Salah? Easy, right?
Yeah. They can't captain Salah. I actually think he could well go and, well, he had 12 shots in the last game. I think he could go on to beat that in this game, you know, try and beat his own record. It seems like a no-brainer. And I was hearing some people having discussions where if you still have your bench boost and your triple captain left, this is probably, and your free hit, this is probably the week to use your triple captain. You know, it's this or a Carl Palmer double. But if there's a single game week to use it in, this is probably one of the final ones that you're going to have, and definitely a fantastic one.
Wish I still had mine. But
it feels like it's going to be another 8-0, isn't it, where he's not involved? You know, that dreaded one that we had a few seasons back where it went exactly according to plan, apart from Salah did nothing.
I miss Southampton.
I don't, because I didn't have any Spurs assets in that 9-0. And I haven't enjoyed FPL since that day, I think, is the way that goes. All right, cool. I'm going to flip back to the other screen here as we head out. Just a final wrap up here. We are short on time. I have to pick up my kids up at school, so I'm going to just breeze through this. I'll put the thank yous up. I won't read through them. Anything stand out for you guys? We have Arsenal with the highest net XG, 2.51, followed by Liverpool, 2.30, then Newcastle and Bournemouth coming in kind of at third, and Chelsea at two flat. Zonals we talked about, these are just chance creation zonals. Go back and compare them with the net with the XT and XG zonals. Anything to add here, just as a final thoughts for the overview?
Similar to Friday, it seems as if there's not many clean sheets on the card here. If Villa's net XG is 1.27 and is the second lowest. So that's one thing that jumps out for me, definitely. But Hogan, what about yourself?
That's a good shout. I was going to say something similar, more pointedly, in terms of just making sure, it's always a good idea to keep tabs on injury news and whatnot. I know there's a high ownership in Spurs defenders. I think that I have a feeling that they get punished, those owners, unfortunately. But I do think that, reiterate the sentiment around, I do really like a City clean sheet and Gvardiol going forward, based on all those injuries in the back line. So, final thoughts.
Nice. And he does get forward. He is sending crosses in there. So, Gvardiol, good shout. I like that too. Thank you, Haulers. Not going to read them out today because I don't want to be late to get my kids, but thank you all. We love you. Thanks for hanging out. Even equally important, thank you, Hogan. Thanks for all your hard work, all your visualizations, and thanks for the development. Like, you're never happy. You're always thinking about it and thinking how you can tweak it and improve it. And that's really inspiring. Thank you for saving me all the time on the matchups threads and everything. And Kieran, legend once again, appreciate you bringing the miracle this holiday weekend. Thanks for all your support, guys.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Let's see. Lastly, we didn't get to really people in the, I didn't shout out people in the chat. Val has joined. K7 is in there. Comb is in there. Again, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip that part of the pod and just say kind of like one last thank you to everybody. One last thank you to the haulers. And as always, peace.